You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK. The FWA podcast from William Hill. Listen to the podcast at williamhill.com/podcast.
Hello and welcome along to the FWA podcast. No Lee Phelps this week, he's not around, so I'm Mark Walton in the studio and I'm joined on the line by Chris Davies of the Sunday People. How are you, Chris?
Hi, and Lee's not around, and he wasn't the only one who wasn't around at the Football of the Year dinner last night. Unfortunately, Eden Hazard, who was the recipient, he couldn't attend, unfortunately. He was just come out of hospital after having emergency surgery for having three wisdom teeth removed. I've never had any wisdom teeth removed, or indeed any wisdom teeth, but I'm told by people who have, it is incredibly painful. He couldn't speak. His head, his mouth was almost like a melon, and he was in a really bad way. But thankfully, Gianfranco Zola, who was a former Footballer of the Year, and Chelsea chairman Bruce Buck spoke on his behalf, and a good time was had by all. We received a message from Hazard. But unfortunately, he wasn't there.
That is a bit of a shame. You went there yourself, though?
I went there myself, yes. Had a good time, met a lot of old friends, new friends, and various people. So, yes, it was a good evening. It was just a shame that the recipient wasn't there, but it was no way that he could have come, unfortunately.
No, unfortunately not. A deserving winner, though, no doubt.
Yes, he got about 53% of the votes, I think. Harry Kane was second, and John Terry was third, and David De Gea was fourth. But yes, he got more than half of the votes. And I don't think anybody who's seen Eden Hazard this season, not even fans of Arsenal or Manchester United, would really say he was not a worthy winner. He's been the most consistent, apart from possibly John Terry, but right from the first game to the penultimate game almost, he's been about 8.59 in just about every game. So a worthy winner.
Yeah, he has been remarkably consistent, as you mentioned. And it was his goal that confirmed them winning the title as well, wasn't it? So kind of fitting in that respect as well.
Yes, indeed, yes. Unfortunately, of course, they had a bit of a surprise at West Bromwich, losing 3-0. But I think that Jose Mourinho said the season for them was over mentally. They'd done what they set out to do, to win the title, and it's very difficult to keep that momentum going in what was for Chelsea an academic game. Chelsea manager Jose Mourinho doesn't like to lose any game at all, but I think he excused this one.
Yeah, you mentioned John Terry in there as well. He's had a fantastic season, knocking on a bit now as well, and if he starts the game on Sunday, it'll be the first time in his Chelsea career, I believe, that he started all 38 games in the Premier League.
Yes, indeed. Yes, not bad for someone who Rafa Benitez thought was past it. I watched John Terry very closely a couple of weeks ago, and in many ways, he hardly touches the ball. His reading of the game is so good that he can actually mark space, if you see what I'm trying to say. And he's a great organiser of the defence. But his reading of the game is so good that he's one step ahead of most people. He's a brilliant, brilliant defender. He doesn't have blistering pace. But again, he makes up for that by his intelligence, his football intelligence, and the way he sees moves coming. And he does everything he can to make sure that space is covered. He's had a terrific season, both as a footballer and a captain. And also, I think we must be fair to him. He's not had the best of media, maybe justifiably, over the last 3 years or so. But I think he was going to speak on behalf of Eden Hazard, but unfortunately he's away for a couple of days. But it shows how the media have repaired the relationship with John Terry and vice versa. So I think he deserves his place amongst the Chelsea greats.
Yeah, is he still England's best centre-half?
I'm not sure, really. I think there's, in many ways, you'd have to say yes if you're the captain of the centre-half of the champions, then you've obviously had a very, very good season. But that, his time is up there. He stepped down from the international stage, and we know why. But certainly, as far as he's the best English defender, I would say yes, definitely, if not England, if you see the difference.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. We should mention Harry Kane in there as well. He was second in the awards, I believe. He's had a very good season.
Yes, he has, and his season in many ways only started in November. That's when he, so I think he scored his first Premier League goal. So to get, I think it's around 30 goals in, let's say, two-thirds of a season, in his first full season, as it were, you could almost say his rookie season, is an incredible achievement. He scored some really great goals. He scored vital goals. He's not one of these players who scores the third goal in a 3-1 or 3-0 victory. He gets the goals that mattered. And I'm really excited about Harry Kane for England. I think that the injuries that Daniel Sturridge seems to collect far too regularly leaves a place open. Danny Welbeck is not what I would call an old-fashioned centre-forward. He tends to play in a wider role. And I think that Harry Kane is going to be, apart from Wayne Rooney, who again can play slightly deeper, but I think Harry Kane is the future of England in the number nine shirt.
In terms of manager as well, it was another success for Chelsea, Jose Mourinho winning the award. I suppose a lot's been made the fact that he hadn't won a single Manager of the Month award throughout the season, but he's been named Manager of the Year.
I wish someone could explain to me how you can be Manager of the Year, but not Manager of the Month ever. Given, I mean, it's a slight contradiction of terms, isn't it, really? And no disrespect to the managers who have won the Manager of the Month, but you think, hold on, how come this guy's never been the best manager for 30 days, but he's the best manager for 300 days or whatever? But I don't think, again, too few people would argue with that. There's been a lot of managers who have had very, very good seasons. You look at Ronald Koeman, given the fact that they lost so many players and he was a new manager coming in. They may just squeak into Europe, I think. You look at Gary Monk. He's had a great, great season with Swansea. Again, Southampton and Swansea playing some excellent football. And you look at what Alan Pardew did in half a season. And in many ways, you look at Nigel Pearson because, well, I think 5 or 6 weeks ago, I think they were looking at the championship fixtures again, weren't they? And he somehow dragged them from the jaws of relegation to safety. And also, I think Sean Dyche. I know Burnley were relegated, but I think given the budget or lack of that he was working with, I think he can be very proud of Burnley's achievements over the last 9 months, even though there wasn't a happy ending.
Yeah, just going back to Nigel Pearson that you mentioned in there as well. We saw Tony Pulis win the award last year after he masterminded Crystal Palace's escape. Nigel Pearson's done the same at Leicester, but have his antics kind of cost him that later on in the season?
I don't think they did him any good. I mean, first of all, he started by having allegedly an abusive row with a fan. And then he tore a strip off of a journalist to ask a totally relevant question. He did apologise to Ian Baker, the journalist in question, the next day. But, of course, the damage was done and people will remember that. He says he's a bit of a softy. I'm not quite sure whether people who know Nigel Pearson would actually describe him as a softy. I think he's like all managers. He's got the skin of an armadillo and you have to have almost the heart of a parking attendant because you have to treat players who you really like everybody else and you've got to tell them their time is up. But I think he's done an incredible job there. They've got some very good players. But for them to drag themselves from almost certain relegation, I think he deserves all the plaudits that he's getting.
Yeah, skin of an armadillo, heart of a parking attendant, and by his own admission, the flexibility of an ostrich.
Yeah. Yes, that's going to stay with him, isn't it, that one, the ostrich. Sometimes things that managers and players say, they don't always... I go back to Alan Hansen, we're nothing with kids. And that will be... That's a tattoo for life. And I think the ostrich is a tattoo for life. Well, it might be quite a nice tattoo, an ostrich, somewhere. Probably hidden.
Yeah, probably hidden's probably best. It's one of those quotes that's going to stay around, isn't it? It's like the Kevin Keegan moment. I'd love it if we beat Man U and that. They stick around, don't they? So.
Yeah, and football, bloody hell. Sir Alex Ferguson, along with a few others from Fergie, that we best not repeat here.
Yeah, probably best not to. So we'll move on. Let's move away from those awards. And one story that's been in the news all week is that of Raheem Sterling talking about leaving Liverpool now. What do you make of it all? Because it's all a bit up in the air and a bit, he said this and the agent says that. And what do you make of it?
I find it, first of all, I'm finding the story incredibly boring, repetitious. I don't think his agent is doing Raheem Sterling any good in any way, shape or form. I think for Raheem Sterling to associate himself with these quotes as well, which he is by extension because his agent is saying them, he's 20 years old. He shows promise. But honestly, if he thinks that Bayern Munich, Barcelona, Real Madrid, Chelsea, Man United are really, really, really going to be in for him, paying the sort of fee, which I think will probably be about 45 to 50 million that Liverpool would ask because he's got 2 years remaining on his contract, and the club's going to pay him £100,000 plus a week, I don't think so. You look at his record in Europe and at international level, and it's not very convincing. Hey, he's only 20, but I don't think that his agent realises he's only 20. I think what he should do is to stay at Liverpool for a couple of years. If he's that good, Real Madrid and the Bayerns will come. And the interesting thing is the quotes from his agent saying he wouldn't stay even for £1 million a week. They were made in a private group of people who he didn't know, all of them. And what he didn't realise, that one of them was a newspaper reporter. Yeah. And that's how they got into the Evening Standard. So I think when you're an agent like that, I think you have to be a bit more discreet if you don't know everybody. And I don't think that... I think maybe AD Ward should take a vow of silence or go on a sponsored silence for a few weeks. And it was interesting that when he won the Young Player of the Year, he wasn't the Liverpool's Player of the Year. That was Coutinho, rightly so. He was booed by a section of the audience there. So I think they've... And apparently his car was booted on the way out. So I think they've... the Liverpool fans, they don't like... No club likes a player who effectively hands in a transfer request. He hasn't done that literally. But no fans can ever understand why a player would ever want to leave their club. And from Liverpool's point of view, of course, if they do sell him, it's going to make Brendan Rodgers' job of finding replacements even harder, because they're thinking, hold on, you know, they lost Suarez last season, they've lost Carragher, they've lost Gerrard, and now they're going to sell Raheem Sterling. If you keep losing your best players one way or the other, it's going to be very, very difficult for this club to rebuild. But I really think that Raheem Sterling should sit down with somebody who has a more long-term interest in his career than his agent seems to at the moment. He's just after short-term gain. I don't think that's done the footballer any good. He's got promise, he's got potential, but that's all. He hasn't really done it yet.
No, I would agree, yeah. There's potential there, but like I said... The Real Madrids and the Bayern Munichs and teams like that, he's not ready for that yet. And his comments are naive, and his agent's been a bit naive, in my opinion.
Absolutely. You know, he's just making enemies. He's making people dislike Raheem Sterling, who's not a bad guy. I think he's had his head turned. I think that what his agent has done, he's filled his client's head with dreams and money and, you know, going here and there. All the stories have obviously come from the agent. You know, Man United linked with him. Was he going to play at Manchester United? Going to get rid of Herrera? He's been one of their best players this season, hasn't he? Was he going to play at Bayern Munich? You know, was he going to play at Real Madrid? They're going to get rid of Ronaldo. They're going to get rid of all these, you know, great players. No, I don't think so.
No, I think we'll leave that there now. And let's look ahead to Sunday. Survival Sunday, as it's being billed, as two teams could go down. It's between Hull City and Newcastle United. Hull play Man United, and Newcastle are at home to West Ham. We'll take a look at those games, and then we'll get your thoughts on who will go down as well in a definitive summary. We'll start with Hull against Man United, because if Hull win... it's on Newcastle really to perform to stay up. Hull are 11-5, the draw 23-10, Man United are 5-4, but if Hull don't win, they're definitely down. So can they do it?
There's a lot of different sideshows to both these games. Of course, Hull manager Steve Bruce is a Manchester United legend. And he says, they owe me one for all the leg breaks and the nose breaks that he sustained while he was there. As a manager, I think he's tried 21 times as manager of Birmingham, Wigan, Sunderland and Hull to beat Manchester United, and he's never, ever managed it. This is the most important time. This is the most important reunion ever with his old club. Obviously, the amount of money that's going to be at stake is huge. And I'm also told that if Hull City do go down, the manager, who's been assured by the owner that his job is safe, but because of the financial problems they got themselves into when they were relegated last time, I'm told it's in their contracts that their salaries will go down by about 50%. Now, that's still a lot of money that they're going to be earning. You know, there's still a lot of the players will earn in 1 week what many people earn in a year. But nobody likes to lose 50% of their salary. It'll be a very, very interesting game because, listen, Hull have it all to do, all to play for. Manchester United, it doesn't particularly matter. You know, they're definitely in Europe. How's it going to go? I can see a draw.
A draw. Okay, so a draw would put them on 35 points, wouldn't it? So they wouldn't stay up if that's the case.
No.
So you think they'll go down?
Okay. I think the team that most neutrals would be would prefer to see go down is Newcastle United. I think there's a lot of Newcastle fans who almost, you know, would think it'd be calmer if it goes down. There's more protests against the owner Mike Ashley planned, although John Carver, almost certainly in his last game as Newcastle, in charge of Newcastle, has called for peace, but I think it's going to fall on very deaf ears. I think they've won 1 point out of the last 30, and their fall has been as spectacular as Leicester City's rise, almost. And, of course, there's a nice little angle here that Sam Allardyce, of course, was sacked by Newcastle and Mike Ashley. I think it was 7 years ago, and he's still very bitter about that. And I think in what could even be his last game as West Ham manager, because his contract is up in a short while, I think he would love to go out on a high note because, first of all, Sam always loves to win. But also, I think that if he did inflict defeat, whatever Hull City may do is out of his hands, but I think he would love to inflict defeat, the defeat that sends Mike Ashley and Newcastle down. It would be a nice bit of revenge and afters for what happened. But it's going to be a fascinating afternoon with those two games. The news will be spreading. There'll be, you know, people on radios, Twitter, phone, and probably carrier pigeons, smoke signals, you name it. The word is going to be spreading from Newcastle to Hull, and I can't wait for it. It's going to be a great afternoon, unless maybe you're a Hull or a Newcastle fan.
Yeah, it'd be a nervy afternoon if you're a fan of either of those two. Newcastle 4-5, by the way, the draw 5-2, and West Ham are 7-2. With Newcastle's form being so bad, like you mentioned, only 1 point from the last 30 available, is 7-2 too big on West Ham? With the Sam Allardyce factor in there as well?
Yeah, I mean, West Ham's form has almost been as bad as Newcastle's. It's not been good since Christmas, really. But I think that West Ham, they've got to come back off the beach for this game. It's going to be a great atmosphere. And although the game doesn't matter as much to West Ham, although, of course, they could be in the Europa League next season by winning the fair play, that doesn't mean they're going to be pussyfooting around and say, after you, Claude, and everything. But I've got a hunch that West Ham might just do something fairly spectacular against a team that's almost forgotten how to win. I hope the Newcastle fans are behind their team. They should always be behind their team, whatever they may think of the owner. And I can understand their frustrations with the owner. It's going to be a great atmosphere there. And that's what every player, even if you're an opponent, that's what you want to play in. A full stadium, a lot at stake, brilliant atmosphere, live on TV. And if the West Ham players can't rise to the occasion for that, then it's going to be a very sad comment on them.
Mm. Just to spin you through a couple of markets as well, Hull are 1-7 to be relegated, Newcastle 4-1. Obviously, it's the flip side of that to stay up. Newcastle 1-7 to stay up, and Hull City are 4-1 to stay up. But one market that did catch mine, maybe just a little bit of fun, I suppose. Hull to be placed 17th at any time. So if they were to go in front against Man United, but the result at Newcastle goes against them or they end up drawing, it doesn't matter. As long as they go in front, it's 7-4 for them to reach 17th at any point on Sunday. And then if you think they'll go down, Hull to be placed 17th at any time and still be relegated. So they could go 1-0 up, end up drawing 1-1. It's 5-2 for that to happen. So
I think that's a good bet, that is. It wouldn't surprise me if Hull score first. They do have players who can score goals. They've had injuries this season, which has obviously affected them. But they've often taken the lead in games, unfortunately, to lose it. And then, you know, there's a lot of heart and character there. And any team that's managed by Steve Bruce, you know, you're going to get your blood, sweat and tears from them. I think I might be tempted to have a humble little bet on that to take the lead. Not necessarily to win, but to take the lead.
Yeah, of course, it relies on them taking the lead and Newcastle not to be winning. But yeah. It could be a little bit of side interest, I suppose. What will be your best bet this weekend? Is there anything you really like the look of in there?
I tell you what, Sunderland to beat Chelsea.
Right, okay.
I think, again, Chelsea, although it's their last game of the season, I think Jose's going to rest quite a few of his key players. And I think Sunderland showed that they can, what they did at Arsenal, they had to defend for their lives. And I just wonder, I mean, what odds are they to win there?
9-1.
I tell you what, that's not a bad bet. I think in terms of value, that's as good a bet as you're going to get over the weekend. Now, obviously, they're 9-1 for a reason. Jose, you know, they're playing the champions, and Jose Mourinho doesn't lose many games. I think it's only 4 this season. But this is the last game, and there might be a twist in the tail. I think that might be worth looking at, that one.
Okay, big price there. They beat Chelsea last season as well, of course, didn't they, when they needed to stay up. So
that's right.
Bit of history there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, well, good stuff. Thank you very much, Chris. It's been a pleasure to speak to you, and enjoy this weekend's action.
All right. Yes, indeed, the finale. It's going to be a grand finale on Survival Sunday. Cheers.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.